Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Roam if you want to, roam around the world.
Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Of course, we're coming to you from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. For those people who have a map, it's 29 degrees, 59 minutes north, 90 degrees, 15 minutes west. And for those of you who have a sense of history and geography and topography, New Orleans has always actually been below sea level, and which explains a lot 5 years after Katrina, as it comes back with a roar. Hard to believe it was 5 years ago. Troy McPhail, who's the chef of Commander's Palace, remembers it well because he's been there for 8.5 years. So, I mean, you lived through Katrina.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We ended up getting out maybe about a day and a half ahead of time. And it was interesting, to say the least, in the days, weeks, and months that followed.
And you relocated, what, temporarily to Houston?
Yeah, that's right. We've got a restaurant there. We set up our restaurant headquarters at Brennan's of Houston, right downtown on Smith Street. And we kind of ran our day-to-day operations through there.
I guess the biggest question, I've talked to so many of the chefs, including John Besh, who's here, you know, who's got so many restaurants here in New Orleans, but Susan Spicer and everybody else. The real problem was, did people come back? I'm not talking about tourists. I'm talking about your employees.
Yeah, that's right. Today, we're rolling in service right now uptown with about 220 employees total.
And what was it pre-Katrina?
Just about the same number. I had 40 cooks. We have about 10 chefs in the kitchen, so there's about 50 of us. And as we reopened Commander's Palace 13 months later, four cooks returned out of 40.
Wow.
And so it's difficult taking one of America's better restaurants, ripping it down to the studs, and rebuilding it as an icon, and returning it to the top of the heap, you know?
How did you do it?
Well, just talent, perseverance, passion. This is absolutely the only thing that I love to do in life, and I think that really shows. And it's not just me. It's all the great chefs across the city of New Orleans. I really feel like without restaurants really driving folks to come back, it just wouldn't be what it is today.
You know, in our last segment, you were talking about some of the special dishes you have there. I have to bring up again the bread pudding. but then, of course, we've got the shrimp.
Yeah, we've got wild-caught Louisiana white shrimp. These just came off the dock today. We've taken those. We've hickory grilled them and add fresh citrus to the top. We've got some great chilies on there, a little bit of garlic. So it's almost like a ceviche or escabeche kind of thing. And the seafood's awesome right now. You can come to New Orleans, get anything you want, come hang out. The restaurants are wonderful. You got great music, the culture.
Now, did you grill those?
Yeah, they're hickory grilled. And then we finished them the rest of the way in like a really good rum, fresh citrus marinade.
We're back to the liquor again. You guys can't get away from that.
It adds just that much more flavor to your food.
Now, you also brought over some ceviche on top of the tuna that just came off the dock.
Yeah, that's right. We've got some...
Now, don't tell me there's liquor in that.
No, I don't know if there's any liquor in that.
You don't know?
Well, one of my sous chefs made it, to be honest with you. We don't have liquor in everything, I promise you, Peter. But just really good, fresh flavors. When you think of New Orleans, you think of great culture, and you think of the food. And, you know, whether you're in Houston after a big storm like Katrina or all across America, you really feel like you've got a connection with what's on the end of your fork.
Now, you've been here 8.5 years, so you're almost a local.
Almost. 18 years total.
Okay. So for somebody coming here for the first time, friend of yours, okay?
Yeah.
Who's never been here before, what's the one thing you would tell them they should not miss, and do not say the words Commander Palace?
No, I feel like Commander's is certainly a local
You said
kind of
it.
A place.
You said the word. No. Other than Commander's Palace.
Other than Commander's
Come
Palace.
Come
on. I'll be honest with you. I like Portugal. You know, I like sitting down and having a really, really good hamburger. But there's so many fine restaurants here. You could eat
every
single day.
Where do you hang out?
It all depends on my mood, Peter.
Okay, what mood are you in right now?
I like tacos. All right, so there's a couple little joints up and down Magazine Street. One is called the Rum House. You can go in there.
Back to liquor again.
Yeah. You can go and get great food, and it doesn't have
to be expensive. So the excuse is tacos, but the real reason is rum.
Yeah, they got icy cold beers.
There we go. Okay, fine. I always like to ask, it's part of a segment we do called Ask the Locals,
sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you like to hang out that's not in the brochure, that you're not going to find from the CVB or the tourist people.
Yeah.
Give me just one. It doesn't have to be a place to eat, just a place that you like to go.
You know, a really cool place on Sunday afternoons is down in the Bywater. It's called the Bacchanal. And they've got rotating chefs, one a week, every Sunday. They've got live music. You go in, you have a beautiful cheese plate, and you watch the sunset. Mississippi River's right there. It is just a charming, really cool, out-of-the-way place to go.
And what's the biggest surprise that your friends find out when they show up in town here that they weren't expecting to see?
I think there's still some misperception that half of us are underwater. I mean, New Orleans is thriving. You know, the Saints did us right, certainly went to the Super Bowl in this town. I feel like there's so many great people that are living here for all the right reasons. It just got a really, really good vibe, better than I've felt in my 18 years here.
You know, when they say timing is everything, the timing for the Saints was just about perfect.
Yeah, absolutely right. I love this city. Even though it's my adopted hometown, there's nowhere else in the world that I would rather live.
What brought you down here?
Great food. I took some good advice, and somebody said, hey, you know, if you really want to be a great chef, you have only two choices in life. It's either New York City or go to New Orleans, because we got the best regional food in America.
And so you went to?
So I came down here to New Orleans. I was 19, and I actually got my first apartment.
Wait a minute. I read that police report.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's been a wild ride. I can't tell you all the details, but it's been a lot of fun.
All right. And what's the one thing that people are coming down here expecting to see that they're not going to see?
Well, I think people are coming down here saying, oh, man, I can't, you know, this restaurant's not open. I can't get this and this. Everything y'all came down here to do 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, everything's still here. You got great music, great food.
But there's, there's still work to be done.
There's certainly still work to be done. And I think the spirit of New Orleans is to dig in, you know, drive really hard, but have a good time on the side.
All right. Troy McPhail. I'm looking at this food. You're a dangerous man.
It's awesome.
I know.
Check it out.
I will. Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking about history, a lot of history here in New Orleans. That hasn't left at all, although some people don't ever see it. You know, they just think they're born to die on Bourbon Street with a go-cup. There's a whole lot more to do in New Orleans than getting crazy with beads and going topless on the balconies. Right, Troy?
That's exactly it. There's still time for that, however.
You see, we go back to the police reports again.
There's a lot of stuff for everybody, whether it's families, young, old. New Orleans is where it's at.
All right. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate that. And when we come back, as I said, we're going to talk about history. And also, let me recommend to you that you go to our website, which is petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations that are doing all that essential good work in Haiti, in Chile, in Western China, the places that were hit so hard by the earthquake, and, of course, down here in the Gulf. They need your help. And it's not just about texting $10 on your phone to the American Red Cross, although I will say they raised over $41 million for Haitian relief on that. Keep in mind that even though it may not be on the front pages, even though we're just celebrating the sixth anniversary, how about that for a word, the sixth anniversary of the earthquake in Haiti, the rebuilding effort there is going to be generational. It's not going to be tomorrow. It's going to be at least 10 years. And there's a way for you to get involved. It's not just about donating money. It's about getting physically, actively, intelligently involved to figure out what you can bring to the party, because when you figure it out, you are the party. And what you do down there, the gift that you give them is the best gift that you give yourself. So again, go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for that list. It might surprise you about who's doing stuff, even here in the Gulf. You know, the ASPCA is doing good work. The Audubon Society is doing good work. Places that you don't necessarily think are involved, they are involved. And when we come back, a trip through history here, not just in New Orleans, in Louisiana itself. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide, with history itself right here at the World War II National Museum. Back when we come back.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
GoRVing.com. Visit great destinations around the corner or across the country. With new RVs starting at just $5,000, memorable vacations have never been more affordable. To get started, visit GoRVing.com. Go affordably. Go RVing.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the National World War II Museum here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Peter Greenberg taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, so we can solve it right on the air. We were just talking to Troy McPhail from Commander's Palace about some of the hidden gems here in New Orleans. And I just came back from a trip to Jamaica, a place I really like a lot. But again, if it's in the brochure, I don't want to know about it. In fact, we like the hidden gems. And yes, you know you're going to find white sand beaches in Jamaica, and you're going to find blue water in the mountains. But, you know, most people who go to Jamaica, believe it or not, as vacationers, never even leave their resort. They never leave the resort, so they don't understand how cool that place really is. You know, and you see all the brochures with Ken and Barbie frolicking in the white sand. Stop it already. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, when I was down there just a couple of weeks ago, I actually went mushing with the Jamaican dog sled team. You remember the Jamaican bobsled team, because they did a movie about it called Cool Runnings. Well, guess what? There's a guy down there who competed last year in the Iditarod in Alaska as the Jamaican dog sled team. And he actually finished. He froze, but he finished. And guess what? They train in Jamaica, and they will take you for rides there at up to about 45 miles an hour with like 22 dogs in front of you. It's wild. And you're not in snow. You're in dirt, but it's fun. And by the way, wear old clothes, but it's great. Now, the other thing is this. You don't always have to be a thrill seeker or an adventure seeker in Jamaica. You take the Mystic chairlift ride, or you want to go ziplining. I did the ziplining. And for anybody who's ever done ziplining, the first actual time you do it, you are scared out of your mind until you get to the next level, and then you can't wait to do it again. So just remember that. The first time you will be scared, but then you do it. And then you've heard about swimming with dolphins. They've got a deal where you can actually be a sea keeper for a day and work there at Dolphin Cove. You get a hands-on experience with all the trainers there. Things that are necessarily not necessarily in the brochure. And last but not least, you know, we talk about the gastronomic experience here in New Orleans. Well, there's one in Jamaica, but they call it the Jerk Trail. And there's nothing but jerk, and it's 22 restaurants across the island. And one of them that I hang out at all, I mean, every time I go, is a place called Scotchy's. It would never pass a health code inspection in this country, ever. But you don't care. It's all this corrugated tin, and they're cooking it on the natural wood, and it's pork, and it's chicken, and it's and even got some fish in there. And you're going to come out there, you'll come out of there blackened, because the smoke is crazy. But of course, as Chef McPhail would just tell you, it's okay, because no matter what you eat there, you're gonna drown it in Red Stripe, and a lot of it. It's a great combination. You go dog mushing in Jamaica, you do zip lining, and you follow it off at a place called Scotchy's. And if you can survive all that, then you've done all the off the brochure stuff that I like there. And the bottom line is, it proves the point that it's not the destination, it's the experience, and that's the hidden gems for this week. But that's about Jamaica. There are other hidden gems here in New Orleans, especially in Louisiana. And that brings up my next guest, who's the director of the Louisiana State Museum. And his name is Sam Reichels. Hey, Sam.
Hi.
People, and I just talked about people who go to Jamaica who never leave the resort. How many people who come to New Orleans, how many people come to Louisiana, actually spend time, like where we are right now, in a museum?
Not enough, clearly. I mean, we have great attractions here. We have a great history. I mean, we're one of the probably oldest histories in the United States, and nobody knows about it. And it's a unique history. It's not an Anglo history. It's a French history. It's a melting pot history, and it's very unique.
And the thing is, the beautiful thing is, it's a living history. So, I mean, when you think of the history of this country, we are still such a young country, relatively speaking, that we're just realizing certain things, and they don't go back that far.
No, as a matter of fact, we are collecting actively right now on the oil spill, so that history continues as we speak.
Something tells me I don't want to be the archivist for the oil spill.
Somebody's got to do it.
Well, let's talk about the archivist for something that we're celebrating. I say the word very carefully, celebrating the 5th anniversary of Katrina. I mean, you have an exhibit on that.
Yeah, that's right. We've been working about 5 years. We came back right after the storm, and we realized that Katrina was going to be one of the milestones in really all of American history. And we wanted to make sure that we made that available for people coming to this city.
Now, it's more than just photographs.
Oh, yes, way more than photographs. We have a lot of three-dimensional artifacts, including rescue boats, flags from Charity Hospital. We have an axe that a woman in St. Bernard used to chop out of her attic. Lots of oral histories, lots of videotape. We're really trying to give our visitors a feeling for what that storm was actually like.
And what's really particularly interesting about that is that it's a story that's continuing.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, the last room of our exhibit is meant to be updatable, because in many ways, South Louisiana, all of South Louisiana, including the coast, is now a laboratory for kind of recovery and kind of reinventing society, quite frankly. I mean, we have political reform, there's social reform that we're covering, and infrastructure.
Is there a UEP Long Museum area?
We have
a Come on.
Well, it won't be in this exhibit, but we do have a lot of UEP Long artifacts in the collection, yes.
And, of course, the Broderick Crawford retrospective, for those people who remember the movie.
Yes.
Right? Come on.
Yes.
You got to show that movie.
We actually have a movie collection. We have a large bunch of stills, posters, and things. We have clothing that was used in the movie. We had the jacket that was worn in the Buccaneers. So we have a lot of stuff from...
Anything from the movie Everybody's All-American?
You know, I'm not sure.
Shot in Baton Rouge.
Oh, that's right. No,
I was John Goodman in that movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
We probably have a collection in our sports history museum that relates to the model of that movie rather than the actual movie.
I ask this of everybody who comes on the show, so you're no exception. What's the one thing in your museum that I would never expect to see that would, like, blow me away?
I think it's probably something in our music collection. I mean, we have a music collection that goes all the way up to contemporary music, into bounce music, or all the way back into the early days of jazz. So I think it's probably the music collection.
When you said the collection, is this an interactive museum? I'm going to hear music?
Yes. We're actually in the planning phase. During the storm, the Music Museum was in the old U.S. Mint, which was a building that was heavily damaged in the storm. We're actually engaged in the planning process for the reinstall of that exhibit. That's probably about 2, maybe 3 years away.
I got to ask the question, how much did you lose in Katrina?
Surprisingly, not very much. The Mint roof blew off, and we lost about 2% of the collection actually got wet. We didn't lose anything. We were able to freeze dry a lot of that stuff. A lot of it was research, jazz research archive. You freeze dry wet paper. And what that does is it stops it from molding it, and it gives you an opportunity to begin to dry it out.
And mold here is a big problem.
Mold here is
a
huge
problem.
Yes, it's everywhere.
Yeah. When people come to the museum, what's the one thing that you think they're not going to notice, that you're just going to walk by it, that they're fascinated by?
I think there are some small stories, and I think there's the small stories in history are really the stories that people really begin to relate to. And I think, particularly in this exhibit, the hurricane exhibit, I think the kind of the determination of the two young women who chopped their way out of the attic in South St. Bernard is a very interesting story, because it's very matter-of-factly told. They were not panicky. They knew what they had to do. They had just bought the axe. The axe was brand new. They put it in the attic, and they just went about their business and chopped
it
up.
The name of your exhibit, of course, is Living with Hurricanes, so it's really about Louisiana's history with water in general.
Yeah, that's right. We have there's a major hurricane in Louisiana every 40 years. I mean, that's what it works out to if you do the averaging, and that's since it was founded.
But when you talk about living with water, it's more than just the hurricanes.
Yeah, well, the oil spill has certainly proved that. I mean, everything that interacts with the Gulf of Mexico has something to do with the city of New Orleans and South Louisiana. It is where our culture comes from. It's where our commerce comes from. It's where our wealth comes from.
And where your disaster came from.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a threat. It gives and it takes.
Where's the hope here?
The hope is that this is an area of the country that is sort of serving as the canary in the coal mine for the rest of the country. We are not alone in what we're facing. I mean, if there is a global sea level rise, it's not just a Louisiana story. It's not just a New Orleans story. In many ways, South Louisiana can always cope with hurricanes. We've done it for 300 years. We can do that. There are other issues that, including coastal restoration, mean sea level rise, those kind of things that are global. And we're sort of the laboratory for a lot of that.
And it's a living laboratory in the museum.
Absolutely. It is a living laboratory.
All right. Sam Reichelson, the Louisiana State Museum, an exhibit that obviously for all the right reasons continues.
That's correct.
All right. Thanks for joining us. When we come back, part of Louisiana history, which I'm sure Sam would appreciate, is about partying.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about some festivals here in the French Quarter when we come back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. Back with more right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour here on the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana, a place that has become a national treasure. But another national treasure, of course, in New Orleans is the French Quarter. You can't get better history and better bohemian culture, if you will, than there. And joining me now, the executive director of the French Quarter Festivals. Because, you know, New Orleans will stop at nothing for an excuse for another party. And would that be right, Marcy?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's Marcy Schramm. Explain the French Quarter Festival, because, I mean, there's always, it's not just Mardi Gras. I mean, I'm one of the people, I keep on telling my friends, Mardi Gras is like once a year, but the other 51 weeks, they're still partying in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the heart of the city. I mean, the city was founded. The French Quarter was where the people first settled, and it's a delicate neighborhood balance. It's a residential area. It's a huge tourist mecca.
But what it really is, it's the largest concentration of restaurants, art galleries, museums that I can think of, right?
It's also the oyster capital of the world. A lot of people don't know that.
I did not know
more
that.
More oysters are consumed in the French Quarter than any place else in the world.
But more people don't remember it.
Right. Right.
What do we have for dinner? I don't know.
Yes. So what we do, we're an organization that, you know, our noble mission is to keep the neighborhood healthy and alive. We very respectfully produce a lot of really incredible free festivals for the community. They've been discovered
by
tourists.
Let's talk about those.
Sure, absolutely.
Tell me.
In April, we do the French Quarter Festival, our namesake, which this year drew over 500,000 people over 3 days.
Now, what happens at this festival?
Well, we take over the French Quarter. We literally take it over. We have 20 stages of music. It's all local music. We only hire Louisiana musicians. We have special events. We call our food the world's largest jazz brunch because it's a sampling of some of the finest cuisine in New Orleans.
So all the chefs get involved?
Oh, everybody.
Yeah.
It's incredible. The World Championship Oyster Eating Contest, dancing in the streets. I mean, just anything.
You know,
for
I got to
tell
you, that's the one thing I would not like to be cleaning up after, the World Champion Oyster Eating Contest. Just a thought. I just.
It's very civilized.
I'm sure. But the people do this for speed, though, right?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. I would not like to be there cleaning up after.
I think 37 dozen is the record.
37? And how long?
It was minutes. It's
37 dozen?
Yeah, it's kind of frightening to watch, but it's fun.
See what I said? Frightening. You said the words. I didn't say the words. Okay, keep going.
So what we do is over 3 days, it's just a huge celebration. It's the most beautiful time of the year. It's early April, and we're called the kickoff to festival season in New Orleans. Tourists have discovered it and love it, and locals love it because it's a very authentic festival, and we don't bring in any big name stars that aren't from Louisiana. I mean, our superstars are people like Kermit Ruffins and the Radiators and, you know, Irma Thomas. And there's just so much talent in this state that we keep it all homegrown.
Now, I'm going to say something you're probably not going to like, but I'm one of those people who believes that Mardi Gras is for amateurs. And everything else, the other 51 weeks, is really when you want to come to New Orleans.
Right.
Am I right or wrong?
Well, I always tell people, if you're going to come down for Mardi Gras, go uptown. Don't just get stuck in the Quarter. Because there's so much more to Mardi Gras than just the debauchery of the Bourbon Street crowd. So,
now I can tell you something about Mardi Gras. You ready?
Yes.
St. Aug. Now you know what that means. Don't you?
I do know what that means.
And they're not. I go uptown to see them.
Right.
That's where they start.
See, you go uptown.
I go uptown to see them.
You know what to do.
One of the all-time great marching bands ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And they don't mess around.
Performance art.
All right, so you got the festival in April. Keep going.
Yes, and then in August we produce, it's actually my favorite festival. We do, it's a tribute to the life and the music and the legacy of Louis Armstrong, who's our native son. Louis Armstrong, I mean, he changed the world. He was an entertainer like no other.
And you know what's interesting? You're the third person today that pronounced his first name, not Louis, but Louis.
That's how he pronounced it.
Yeah.
Yes. You can go either way, but he called himself Lewis.
And that's what you're going to stick with, absolutely.
Yes, Mr. Armstrong.
All right, so that's the Satchmo Summerfest?
Yes, this year he would be 110. This is our 10th anniversary of this festival. We started on the 100-year anniversary of his birth. It's the only Armstrong festival actually in the country, and we think it's the only one in the world. And the whole weekend is dedicated just to celebrating him and what he gave to the world and what he gave to New Orleans. We do it, this festival isn't just about music and food like some of our other ones. This one, we have a colloquium that is incredible. Scholars come from all over the world. They show movies, they talk. They knew him, they worked with him. His record producer comes in. Some of these guys are in their 90s.
Do they ever jam?
They do. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I have to ask, yeah.
It's a great festival.
All right, so you got the Satchmo Summerfest.
Yes.
And?
And the last one we do in December, we call it Christmas New Orleans Style. And that's it's non-traditional. It's the whole month of December. We produce music and events and food tastings. And the purpose of it is to get visitors to come and discover New Orleans is a beautiful place in December. It's in the 70s. There's so much to do. It's a gorgeous place to visit.
Okay, the truth now, Marcy, is there ever a month that there's not something going on here?
No.
Thank you. I just want to make sure.
Never.
So it's not really seasonal now. Come on, tell the truth. It's not.
It's not. I mean, what we do is we create activities that get people to, I mean, you can enjoy the city any time of the year, but we also throw these events to, you know, add a little to what's going on.
As if there wasn't enough already.
Right.
There are three people still recovering from the oyster eating contest. That's the real problem here. See, you don't want to tell me that story.
Right.
All right. So now, Satchmo's happening when?
August, the weekend of August 7th and 8th.
Coming around the corner.
It's a couple weeks away. We always do it. Louis Armstrong was born on August 4th. So we do this to celebrate his birthday. We always do it the weekend closest to his birth.
How cool.
Yes.
Louis.
Yes.
Don't forget it. It's Louis. And your name, of course, Marcy Schramm, the executive director of the French Quarter Festivals.
Thank you.
Where everything is a festival.
Yes.
All right. When we come back, we're going to shift gears, literally shifting gears, and talk about some serious high-intensity bicycling. You know the Tour de France? Yeah, we're going to talk about that when we come back from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. Marcy, thank you again. We really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
It's a festival.
You.
It's a festival.
Yes.
Okay, fine. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after these messages.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the National World War II Museum here in New Orleans, Louisiana. I said right before the break we're going to shift gears. Well, we literally are going to shift gears and talk about the hard to believe because we've just, you know, come after the World Cup, but it's been called the largest sporting event in the world. And what is it? It's the Tour de France. Hard to believe. And joining me now, the editor-at-large at Bicycling Magazine, Bill Strickland. Hey, Bill, is it really the largest sporting event in the world?
Well, are we talking geography? Fans on the side of the road? It probably is. TV viewership? It's up there. It's right with the World Cup.
See, now, I thought that everybody has a different definition of that because, you know, if you talk about the largest spectator sport in the world for one single day, it would be the Indianapolis 500.
Right. The tour is it's 3 weeks. The road is lined with people. The entire country shuts down. People take their vacations. They drive RVs along the route. So, you know, I've been there oftentimes for one stage on one mountain. There will be a million people. So I got to think
that's
it is
big.
The largest.
That's big. And, of course, France needs no excuse to take the entire month of July and August off, so there you go.
Well, this is daily life. You know, they take their picnic basket, their blanket, their baguette and cheese and wine, and they wait 4 hours, the race goes by in 30 seconds, and, you know, they finish their lunch.
And this year is interesting because you've got two guys who are duking it out, one who's probably not going to win, and that's Lance Armstrong, with Alberto Contador, who used to be on his team.
Right. They were teammates last year, bitter rivals when they were teammates. I think they're actually friendlier this year now that they're not teammates. And at this point, they're really not even rivals. Lance had a bad day. He crashed three times. He lost 11 minutes in one day. And Contador definitely has the best of Lance at this point.
Now, this is the 97th Tour de France, but tell me this, how long does it last, and how long does it, what's the actual length of the actual distance?
It's always a little over 2,000 miles, 2,100 miles. It's 3 weeks. They take 2 days off somewhere in those 3 weeks, but they're racing every day. They're going a little over 100 miles, 150 miles. Some days it's flat, and they kind of they average maybe 25 miles an hour on those days until they get to the finish and go 45 miles an hour. And some days they go up over the Alps and Pyrenees, and those are the real killers.
I bet. Okay, I've always wanted to ask this question, so now you get the chance to answer it. In a given 2,100-mile race like this, how many flat tires usually?
Unbelievable amount. These guys, they get flat tires, they bump wheels, and they crash, and they go down. Their brakes rub their tires. It's just an incredible amount of maintenance is going on. Sometimes as they're riding, their team cars will pull up beside them, mechanics lean out the window, and they'll do a brake adjustment or a shifting adjustment as the riders.
You mean as they're on the bike?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And sometimes it goes wrong, and a bike ends up under the car wheels.
Oh, that would be called going wrong, yes. But, I mean,
yeah.
It's legal for them to do maintenance while they're riding the bike?
Yeah, it's legal, and it's also, sometimes the mechanics, they need to do the repair for quite a bit, especially if the rider is tired, so they'll sort of hang on to the seat or the bike frame while the car goes fast enough to, say, get the riders back up to the pack.
Wow. Okay, well, here's my question. If I was a competitor in the Tour de France, am I only allowed to have one bike, or do I have seven backup bikes?
So they have a lot of bikes on the – there are bikes racked on the roof. Each team has two cars that follow the race, and they're just – they're filled with bikes. Each car has, five or six bikes. So plenty of spare bikes, plenty of spare wheels. Sometimes if the leader has a flat, one of the other riders on the team will just stop and give the leader a wheel or even a whole bike and sit there and wait for the team cars to come up.
And that's legal too?
Yeah, that's legal as long as, it's your teammate is – the one thing you can't do is get a push, although even that gets stretched on the hills.
Well, if the maintenance van is sitting next to you and you're going uphill, you're getting a push.
Well, yeah, they hang onto the bike a little longer than they need to, and sometimes when the team cars hand out the water bottles, those tend to be a little sticky, and the riders hang on to them for 10 or 15 seconds before they get their hands off.
And do they get penalized for that?
They can if it's flagrant. It's the kind of thing where it's only wrong if the officials see you. But it's very common on the hills.
Yeah, sort of like World Cup soccer.
yeah, taking.
I've never seen more fakery on the field than I've seen in World Cup soccer, where guys just fall down and make believe they're hurt. It's ridiculous.
They're great actors.
I know, it's WWF with a ball. All right. Bill Strickland, the editor-at-large at Bicycling Magazine. We really appreciate that. Of course, the Tour de France ends this weekend, so check it out. But it ain't going to be Lance Armstrong this time around. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide with a special musical guest from New Orleans right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the National World War II Museum in New Orleans. And of course, you can't go anywhere in New Orleans, let alone Louisiana, without music. It is so much a part of the character of this city, of course. And we couldn't do this show without at least trying to sneak in a little music. And joining me now is somebody who's making me feel very old today. She's all of 19 and about to turn 20, so try to control yourselves. But you've been playing since you're 4.
Yes, I started playing when I was 4.
This is Amanda Shaw, by the way.
Yes, my name is Amanda Shaw. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I am homegrown. And I started playing violin when I was 4.
Now, you just woke up one morning at 4 and got out of the diapers and said,
well,
I'm playing?
What happened was there was a television program on, and they had like an orchestra, the violin, and I saw the violin, and it was definitely love at first sight. I knew that that's what I wanted to do.
So your parents said they got you a violin?
Oh, yeah. And it's really funny because people ask me if my parents play music. And nobody does. And as a matter of fact, they say they always used to joke in college about all the theater kids and all the kids who used to love being up on stage and how dorky they thought it was. And then they ended up with a kid who does it all the time, so who loves it. So
when did you figure out you were actually good?
Well, you know what? I'm really lucky, like you said, to live in such a wonderful city that has so much great music that really it was the music community that took me in here and really really helped me out. And a lot of starting out, you know, when I got a little bit older, when I was like 8 or 9.
One of those older years.
Yeah, yeah. You know, later on.
Oh, God.
But, you know, them calling me up and, hey, we have a gig and, you know, and why don't you come sit in?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but when somebody calls you up in New Orleans and say, we're having a gig, why don't you sit in, it's usually at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you know, there's music going on here all the time. So sometimes it might be 2 a.m., sometimes it might be 5, and that's a wonderful thing.
Your parents
thing.
Had to be very understanding because you were out late. You were out late.
Absolutely. You know, I was, but you know what? It was such a wonderful experience, and this is a great city to experience those things.
Well, can you play something for me?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Go for it. I want to hear this. Unbelievable.
Thank you.
Now, looking at that violin, that's seen some miles.
Yeah.
That is one beaten up violin.
Yeah, you know, I have a couple. I have actually two that I travel with, and this one, they put it together for me. I loved the wood, and the guy, he put it together for me. It's great. I love it. It's my best friend.
Now, when you sit, I was waiting for the washboard to come in. You know, there was a little bit of washboard, but you know that's more traditional. What you just played is really more traditional fiddling.
Yes, you know, I'm classically trained, but you know, I love Cajun music, and what I love about it is how much fun it is, and the people are all about having fun. And you know, here in New Orleans, we have, you know, over at Tipitina's, there's the on Sundays they have the Fado Dough, where the people come out dancing. They have on Thursday nights Zydeco nights at Rock and Bowl.
Now we're talking about
yeah. And they have, you know, these people, they dance from like 8 at night until like 1 in the morning. It's they nonstop, even when the band is on break, they put CDs on and those people dance. And I love that. It is so much fun. And it's all about what I am. You know, it's about food, fun, everything.
In a given week, how often are you playing in town?
Oh, well, it depends. You know, usually in the month, especially our festival months. I know we were talking about festivals earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and this is where it's great for musicians. You know, I'll have, you know, anywhere from like 23 gigs in a month to, you know.
23 gigs in a month? That means there are 7 days you're not working. That's it.
Yep. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is I feel that, you know, music is New Orleans' number one export. So even the gigs that we're not gigging here at home, there's a lot of musicians that are going out there and representing us all
around
the world.
And if you're not gigging at home, you should gig on the road.
Absolutely. And have a good time. And that's definitely what we try to do, my band and I, Amanda Shaw and the Cute Guys, we try to do everywhere we go.
Amanda Shaw and the Cute Guys.
And all the Cute Guys are like 45 or older.
I like you even more now. Now I'm really liking you.
But you know what? I think they're all cute in their own way.
Amanda Shaw and older guys. All right.
No.
Hey, Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Thank
music
you.
Means we are out of time for the show, but what a great way to end it. Thank you so much.
And don't forget to pick up my record, Good Southern Girl, August 31st.
Nice plug, girl.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks to Mike Worrell, Jeff Ryder, of course, back east, Robert Carroll, who helped us out and pulled the rabbit out of the hat here. Of course, Shelly Goncharowski, Vanessa Mayfield, and Jennifer Day. Thanks, everybody, to the World War II Museum here in New Orleans. You got to come see it. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.